It is now time for our featured segment, and our featured guest of the week has arrived, ladies and gentlemen. As Jamaica marks 60 years of nationhood, recently, last week here in New York, we saw the official Grand Gala that took place at the Marriott Marquis. But a few weeks ago, opposition leader and leader of the People's, President of the People's National Party, Mr. Mark Golden, he and his team took a tour of the northeastern side of the United States. How did that tour go? We will hear from the leader in just a moment. Anthony, please introduce our guest, sir.
Yeah, Rastam, our special guest on my check this morning is the leader of the opposition, Mr. Mark J. Golden, an attorney at law, specializes in the areas of corporate finance, capital markets and mergers and acquisitions. And he's been lead counsel on private sector issues of domestic and international debt and equity securities, and in several large corporate mergers and acquisitions. And he has served on the task force which performed the developmental work leading to the creation of the Financial Services Commission as Jamaica's regulator for the securities, insurance, unit trust, mutual funds, and pension industries. He has also represented the Private Sector Organization of Jamaica on the Matlon Tax Reform Committee and before the Joint Select Committee considering the Companies Bill 2004. He served as the opposition spokesman on industry and commerce until May 2011 and then as shadow minister for justice until being appointed minister of justice back in January 2012. And Mr. Golden was first elected member of parliament for South St. Andrew in 2017 and in November 2020. And he was elected as president of the People's National Party and now serves as the leader of the...
So, ladies... go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, we welcome Mr. Golden to Groovin' Radio 93.5 this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Mr. Golden. How are you this morning?
Morning, Rasklem. Morning, Anthony. I am well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to come on your show.
Yes, sir.
And greetings to all your listeners.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much once again for taking this opportunity to join us here and come and talk to the diaspora. Anthony, before you run, though, I would love for Miss Pat to get a signed copy of this book to the opposition leader before she leaves Jamaica. It's a very interesting book, and I think Mr. Golden should have a copy of this in his collection so he could, you know, view it and read it whenever he wants. I make that small request of you, Anthony Turner.
Request.
Yes, sir.
All right. So I will make sure that's on it.
Please do so. I know you have to run, Anthony, so we'll talk to you later on. Take care. Mr. Golden, recently you took a tour along with a small team, members of the People's National Party, as Jamaica was getting ready to mark 60 years of nationhood. That tour started down in Fort Lauderdale in the Miami area and ended up here in the northeast of New York City. This is where we're going to start this Saturday morning. How was that tour for Mr. Mark Golden and his team?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for making that request to get a copy of Miss Pat's book. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, sir.
You know, she's a pioneer in the music business, and mm-hmm. EP Records has been, you know, such an important player in the whole reggae and dancehall space. So, you know, I'd really love to read that book.
Yes, man,
definitely. Yes, in terms of our tour, well, you know, we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of Jamaica's independence this year, so it's a jubilee year for Jamaica. And we thought it was a good time for the PNP and the opposition to visit the United States and, you know, engage with Jamaicans there and others who want to speak to us and get to know us, so we can share ideas, hear what the issues are that our diaspora feels are particularly critical at this time, and also share with the diaspora our approach to, you know, important matters of state and issues of policy affecting Jamaica. So we planned this tour, started in Florida, and we were in the Fort Lauderdale / Miami area. spent a couple of days there, and that was very good, actually. We had opportunities to have substantive discussions with stakeholder groups on issues like security, education, healthcare, and so on. We also attended some national functions, really, in promoting Jamaica 60, celebrating Jamaica 60. Mm-hmm. In Miramar, there was a street dance after a concert there, and that was very well attended. Mm-hmm. Then we moved up to Atlanta, mm-hmm. and that was also a nice visit. We met with the diaspora groups in Atlanta. We had a good dinner with stakeholders there, where I made a speech, and you know, there was a good question and answer session afterwards. I did an interview on a community radio station, mm-hmm. and various other things happened. And then we went up to Washington D.C. Mm-hmm. And in D.C., I was a lecturer at a forum organized by a Caribbean think tank, mm-hmm. and that lecture was on the topic of Caribbean regional integration, mm-hmm. and we also visited the capital, and we met with officials from the State Department, mm-hmm. and that was a fruitful meeting as well. Both in Miami and in D.C., we visited the consul and the embassy as well, met the officials there. Mm-hmm. And after we then traveled to New York, I gave a lecture at the Medgar Evers College, mm-hmm. on the diaspora, the history of diaspora and the role of the diaspora. And that was well attended. We also had stakeholder meetings, both with affiliates of the party and also wider groups on issues of security again, which is a big issue, mm-hmm. And other issues of concern. And we met with some of the Congressional Black Caucus, who have to be meeting in New York, and we had breakfast with Congresswoman Yvette Clark. Mm-hmm. and that was also a wonderful opportunity as well. So that was very positive.
Great. Now I want to go back to D.C. for a moment, Mr. Golden, and the whole stuff. Well, of the host down there in D.C., for you being in Washington, D.C., is a man who has been in D.C. for quite some time, after leaving Jamaica and going on to Howard University. Ambassador, former ambassador from Jamaica to the United Nations, Mr. Curtis Ward, he hosted you there. How was everything with Curtis Ward? Because, you know, Curtis is well connected in Washington, D.C., and I'm pretty sure that Curtis got some real players for you to sat down with, huh?
Yeah, he spearheaded the way the tour is organized. Mm-hmm. In each city that we visited, there was a local organizing committee, mm-hmm. that was responsible for deciding what we would do and making the necessary arrangements in that city. And Curtis was, I believe, the team leader,
yes.
in the D.C. area for mm-hmm. us. And as you have said, you know, he has an international career, mm-hmm. In diplomacy. And, you know, is very knowledgeable about international affairs. He also has good contacts within the U.S. State apparatus. And so he was able to organize various meetings that we had. He was the one who put on the forum where I mm-hmm. gave the lecture. Mm-hmm. So it was a very key link for us in D.C.
In one of those gathering there in Washington, D.C., I was told that within the audience capacity there was retired FBI special agent and now attorney at law, like yourself, Mr. Wilfred Ratican. And I remember the last time you were here on Groovin' Radio, I did pose the question to you in terms of reaching out to the diaspora, if you would be willing to sit down and have a conversation with Mr. Ratigan. And lo and behold, I was told that you had that sit down meeting, and I applaud you for that. How was that meeting with Mr. Ratigan, in your words, sir?
Right. Well, in fact, that meeting took place
before
at my office in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Shortly before we went on this diaspora tour, and mm-hmm. he came with some colleagues of his, and we had a very, I think, productive meeting, and we were sharing ideas, mm-hmm. sharing concerns, It was a very open discussion, and you know, I appreciate it very much. His taking the time to come and meet with me, and you know, he obviously has tremendous experience in the security area, it is a relationship that we want to continue to build on, because you know, our approach to this whole issue is that, you know, all the answers don't lie in any one individual's head. You know, we have to collaborate. There are different perspectives which are valuable. You know, sometimes when you're here in Jamaica, you're kind of in the trenches seeing and feeling the day-to-day effects of our problems. And, you know, there are perspectives from the diaspora which are, a bit, because of the distance, you know, maybe more objective and have more reflective and so on. So we very much appreciate and value the input of persons who have a strong passion and interest and love for Jamaica, and who want to share and contribute.
Yes, great.
To the progress of the country.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. My name is Ras Clem. Our very special guest this morning on Mic Check is the president of the People's National Party, the leader of the opposition, Mr. Mark J. Golden, attorney at law. On his recent tour of the Northeast, as Jamaica marked 60 years of political independence, 60 years of nationhood, as Jamaica marked this independence, this political independence. Earlier on this year, you know, there was a royal visit to Jamaica, and a lot of chattery came out of that visit. We heard the Prime Minister said Jamaica is getting ready to move on. We thought we would have seen a lot more activities on that statement of moving on. The tour that you took of the Northeast, Mr. Golden, when you got back to Jamaica, during this whole independence thing, when you look back at 60 years of independence, political independence as it is known as, how far do you think the needle has moved for Jamaicans, and especially the average Jamaican on the ground?
It's a complex question, because, you know, we tend to focus on the problems and the challenges that remain, and perhaps don't, I think, give enough credit to what has been achieved. So, you know, in 1962, when we got independence, I believe illiteracy in Jamaica was 66%, for example. You know, black people were not able to get jobs in banks and other private institutions. Women were not even well represented in most of the important professions, most of the important jobs in the public sector, and so on. A lot has changed since then in those areas. On the other hand, you know, I would say that we have not delivered on the aspirations of the founders of our independence when it comes to inclusive economic growth, building a fair and equitable society with opportunities for all. I think that they have made some progress in areas, but there's a lot more that needs to be done in terms of building our human capital, making our people productive, so that the productivity of the nation, in terms of generating value-added goods and services to increase the wealth of our people, these are areas which I think a lot more attention needs to be brought, and investment needs to be made in the education system, early childhood development. I mean, we've seen recent studies showing that the output from our primary schools is not where it needs to be. They're too high percentages of our students enter secondary school still unable to read and write effectively. We need to fix these things, because until we do, we're not going to achieve our goals as a people. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, Ras Clem. You know, there have definitely been positives. You know, Jamaica has built a brand internationally around our entertainment, our music, our philosophy of Rastafari, you know, our ganja. You know, there's so many things that go into the mix as to what brand Jamaica is, our cuisine, you know, our dancing moves, our language, the Jamaican language that we speak, all of these things have really helped to build Jamaica's in the consciousness of the world as a small but vibrant place. But on the other hand, you know, there are still many very important areas that we are lagging behind and that need significant attention and perhaps a new way of thinking to move us forward on.
Yeah, many, many challenges. But just think about this now. Emancipated, independent, but yet still we still have a colonial education. And 60 years later, as we mark this 60 years of nationhood, most times, a lot of times when we talk about the greatness of our even our sports athletes. But what I want to folks to understand is that if we look at the real narratives here, and I said this last Sunday here on radio, that in 1948, the first set of athletes that left Jamaica was a special, special group of people. Not only that they were talented on the track, but off the track. And I'll mention three people on that team. The late Dr. Cynthia Thompson, the first Jamaican woman to made it into the 100 meters and 200 meter finals at the 1948 Olympics. She went on to become a doctor. We don't talk about those high achievers on and off the track in terms of their education and their achievement on the track. Dr. Otto Wint, one of the first Olympic medalists, if not the first Olympic medalist for Jamaica. He went on to be a doctor. The great Herb McKinley, who went on to be an insurance executive. And it's sometimes when we talk about these achievements like sports and track and field, we talk about gold medals, but we don't talk about the achievement that these individuals have made off the track. But our education system, though, Mr. Golden, it really needs to be fixed. And fix fast. 600 teachers will not be returning to the classroom come September. Should we be concerned, or how concerned should we be about that, Mr. Golin?
Yeah, well, I think we have to be very concerned is the short answer to that. I mean, it is true that Jamaica has for many years lost professionals, both in the education field, teachers, even more so nurses. And also other professionals, you know, it's what's referred to as the brain drain. And, you know, North America and Europe are the main beneficiaries of that because they allure of higher salaries and basically a better way of life for those professionals. It's hard for them to resist. But we definitely need to find ways of improving the living conditions and working conditions of these critical professionals that we need to develop our nation. Mm-hmm. And obviously in the teaching area, that is a fundamental problem that we have because, as I've said, the data show that our performance in education is lagging behind. Mm-hmm. Although we have so many more tertiary institutions than we had at Independence. At Independence, we only had one, which was the University of the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think CAST was just emerging. Norman Manley had built College of Arts, Science and Technology in the late 50s. But we now have numerous tertiary institutions and so on. But the plumbing, as you know, I was speaking to a leading educator in Jamaica, and he was saying to me, the plumbing is the problem. And what he's referring to is really the systems of educating the children, you know, to ensure that they have they're well-rounded and competent in the basics that on which everything else is built intellectually. So that is where I think we're lagging behind. And we can't do it without having adequate and motivated teachers. So we have to find ways of making them feel respected, making them feel appreciated, and making their lives easier. And you know, this is an area which I think we have fallen short on nationally, and more needs to be done. You had mentioned, Rasclem, the whole question of independence in the context of the Queen being our head of state. You know, and I must say on that how disappointed I am that the government has done nothing to move that forward since he made that comment to Prince William much earlier this year.
March.
I would have expected by this time in March, by this time we would have expected a clear roadmap. I'd have expected the legislation to achieve it to have at least been tabled in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing has happened. Even the committee, which the Minister of Constitution and Legislative Affairs said was to be established, has not been established to look at constitutional reforms. And, you know, so I feel that, you know, this is not something that the government is really committed to. I think this is something that they felt pressured into embracing. But, you know, polls show that the nation, by a majority now, wants to see this happen. So I'm hoping that now, you know, public pressure will continue to engage around this issue so that we can see some movement towards the final goal.
Talking about public pressure, we here in the diaspora, we will call that what we see the government now doing after that bold statement about moving on and forming this new ministry, which is under the responsibility of former Attorney General Marlene Mulahoo Ford. We will call it that they're kicking the can down the road, because now we are hearing about legislation to be proposed in 2023. And you're absolutely right. I think they were pressured after the Honorable Mia Motley took her country, Barbados, into the Republic status. Jamaica felt pressure as, and just look at where Jamaica was way back then. Jamaica was known as one of the leaders in the Caribbean in terms of our government, in terms of our governance. We were there. We were one of the first to gain political independence. At the same time, when countries like Trinidad and Tobago was getting their independence also, they will celebrate at the end of this month here their independence. So I think we're falling back in a major way, and our leaders, yes, our elected officials in Jamaica must be very, very clear and be honest with the citizens of the country. I want to talk about healthcare. We're going to take a break in a few minutes, but when we come back, I want to wrap up on healthcare. Also want to wrap up on there is a controversy taking place in Jamaica with the National Housing Trust. And this week, I think the opposition and the government was caught in a little battle there. You disagreed with the way the NHT is going, and the Prime Minister is saying that, boy, it's a political fight that he think, you know, some officials are using poor people as pawn here. But it's plain and simple. If truth, what we're hearing, Mr. Golin, it doesn't sit well in terms of how people get their money, who gets money and stuff like that, and who benefits. And when you put your money in, and if you should take a break, you know, how do you get your monies back? It's something that we want to hear your side of that story. So as we wrap up the tour part of this conversation this morning, all in all, Mr. Golin, how would you view the tour of the Northeast? How was it for you? How would you view it? How was it?
It was fantastic. I mean, I must say it was hard work, very busy schedule, but the response was really positive. People were so happy to see us, happy to engage with us. The attendance at all the events was very good. You know, and we really, I think, did far better than I was expecting. I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to future visits.
But anyway, I'm happy that you enjoyed it, you know, because I think it has moved the needle now in terms of people getting to know Mark Golin. I think it has moved the needle in the right direction. Mark Golin opening up and having conversations like the one you're having this morning. And your government sitting in waiting. The People's National Party could be the ruling government in Jamaica. At any moment, if an election is called tomorrow, who knows what will happen? So Mr. Golin and his team has to prepare themselves. And do you think that at this moment, sir, do you think at this moment that the People's National Party is in that position that if election should be called soon, you're ready to take over? Do you think?
Yes, I think we are. We have been working hard to build a team, build our cohesion. We recently had a very important document that we've been waiting on for a year, which is essentially a philosophical restatement of the party's commitment to its fundamental ideals in 21st century terms. And that was delivered to our National Executive Council meeting in July and will go to the annual conference in September for approval. And that provides the kind of basic architecture for our policy and programmatic development, because it restates the principles that we believe in and the issues that how all of our policies and programs will have to be tested against that. So I do feel that we have made tremendous strides over the last year, and I do think that the Jamaican people are increasingly seeing that in the relevance of what we say and what we offer when we make public statements. And they're clamoring for change because, you know, times are hard. Mm-hmm. And the world is going through a very difficult time, and Jamaica has been badly impacted by the cost of living crisis. And the government really has done what I regard as is very little, or it's hopelessly insufficient, mm-hmm. to address the real needs of the people at this time. And we've been saying to them that they need to be more proactive and take the necessary protective steps for vulnerable parts of the population. Mm-hmm. And people are appreciating that message. So, yes, I think that, you know, if we are given the blessing of the people to take the country forward, we are well positioned to acquit ourselves repay the trust of the people.
Mm. Let's elevate some hope. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest this morning is the leader of the opposition, President of the People's National Party, Mr. Mark J. Golden. After the break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll spend about 10-15 more minutes with Mr. Golden to wrap up this conversation this morning here on Grooving Radio. Stay where you are, ladies and gentlemen. Get a cup of tea, a cup of coffee of your choice, or a glass of water. When we come back after the 3-minute break, we will continue our conversation with the leader of the People's National Party, Mr. Mark J. Golden. Back in 3 minutes, Mr. Golden.
It never worked. No, it never worked. Yeah. Tell Satan it never worked.
Yeah. Sounds of Marion Orr will take us up to the top of the hour to the break. Yeah.
Tell bad mind it never worked.
Bad mind.
Sorry to hurt your feelings, but I did not die.
Yeah.
Sorry to hurt your feelings. As you can see, I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Sorry to hurt your feelings. Me no broke, yo, that's a lie. Cause my daddy rich, so me rich. Yeah. We own mansion in the skies. You thought I'd be dead right now. Hungry and all of it right now. Homeless without a bed right now.
Hello, reggae fans. This is Toots from Toots and the Maters saying tune in. One time. Hey, let's get moving.
And thank you so much, Uncle Frederick Nathaniel Toots Hibbert. Rest in peace, my brother. And that is how I welcome you back, ladies and gentlemen, to the final 26 minutes of our Grooving Radio's presentation this morning. Thank you so much for joining the Grooving Radio experience. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. And my featured guest this morning is the leader of the People's National Party, the president of the People's National Party, opposition leader, Mr. Mark J. Golden. Welcome back, Mr. Golden.
Hey, nice to be here with you, Afton.
One love. Before we took the break, Mr. Golden, we were wrapping up on the tour of the Northeast, but one thing that came out of the tour, when the team got back to Jamaica, a few days or a few weeks later, news came that one of your team members, Member of Parliament from, I think, Southeast St. Anne's, Lisa Hanna, she said she will not make herself available for the next election. How is that departure of Lisa Hanna, how is that going to affect the People's National Party, sir?
Well, I think Lisa has served as an MP for a number of terms now.
Mm-hmm.
She's had some challenges within her own constituency, and I think they have led her to making the decision that she doesn't want to continue in representational politics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I met with her subsequently. We had a nice chat. She's still a member of the party. She's still a member of the shadow cabinet, our spokesperson for foreign affairs and foreign trade.
Mm-hmm.
She's, I believe, pursuing her own business interests. And, mm-hmm. you know, representational politics is tough. And, it,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's served well, and she's served for a good period of time. So I respect her decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we will continue the road that we're on to mm-hmm. build the cohesion of the party and mm. build a team and put forward to Jamaica our plans and proposals for taking the country forward.
Mm-hmm.
And thus far, Lisa remains part of that. So, yes. You know, I don't think that, although it was a surprise, I think, for many people to hear that she mm-hmm. made a decision that she won't be running again in the next election. I don't think that the impact of that will be something that will hold us back.
Well, I had a brief conversation when the message came. I let it sink in for about a week before I sent her a message. And what I told her was that I think she should stand by. Don't go too far. Jamaica will need a Lisa Anna very close by. She is a very, she's a good individual and she has done some great things. Yes, I understand that she's an embattled MP down there in St. Anne's, and representational politics is a very tough thing to be involved with. And you know, you can't please everybody. You cannot please everybody, but it comes with the territory. They're gonna critique you. And one thing I recognize, Mr. Golden, is that for some people, it is okay for us to critique a Joe Biden. It is okay for us to critique a Barack Obama, or even a Bush, a George Bush. But it's not okay. It seems as if it's not okay to critique our local politicians in Jamaica. And I don't know why, but it's part of the game that I think our elected officials should be accustomed to by now. Let's move on to the next topic, Mr. Golden. And the NHT conversation that we are hearing in Jamaica. What is true and what is not true? I mean, what is happening with the NHT?
Yeah. Well, there are two issues. First of all, you know, the NHT has recently been in the news because they built a large block of apartments in New Kingston, the price of which is coming out at over $30 million per apartment. And, you know, given the reason why the National Housing Trust was established, which was really to allow and afford the opportunity to the workers of Jamaica who would not otherwise be able to access housing, to get a house and their own door key. That was considered to be an example now of the way in which the Housing Trust has diverted from its true mission. But more recently, just last week, it was announced that the special arrangements that give a slightly lower interest rate on NHT loans, mortgage loans, to persons with disabilities, public sector workers, and persons 55 and over, that discount arrangement on the interest rates was going to be removed. And we felt that was a retrograde step. Mm-hmm. We were very upset about it, and I spoke about it and said that is something that we will reverse mm-hmm. when we come to power, because first of all, persons with disabilities have costs in their daily life mm-hmm. that ordinary persons who do not have disabilities do not have to incur those costs around transportation, around how they have to retrofit their homes so that they can have access to mm-hmm. the normal way of living and so on. It is not fair to take away that benefit from them. Public sector workers are generally less well paid than they are in the private sector for equivalent jobs. Mm-hmm. They have been over many years having to hold strain, but the adjustments to their salaries have not kept up with inflation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, early this year, they lost the motor vehicle concession, which is a duty concession that was part of their package, and that has now been removed. Now, to take away this NHT benefit from them, mm-hmm. we felt was disrespectful, and we also felt was only going to contribute to the brain drain that we have been discussing earlier mm-hmm. with teachers and nurses leaving the country. So we thought from a policy perspective, it was a bad idea and a bad signal. Mm-hmm. And similarly, persons 55 and over, when they borrow because of their age, the duration of the loan is shorter than a person who's younger when they're borrowing. Mm-hmm. And because the duration is shorter, the monthly payments tend to be higher. And so the interest rate discount for them mm-hmm. was a way of making housing affordable for them if they're buying a house at that age. Mm-hmm. And again, we felt, you know, that taking away that benefit was a bad move. Mm-hmm. So we were very critical of it. And we have committed to reinstating those benefits when we come to office. Mm. Part of the reason why this is happening, I believe, though it hasn't been said by the government, is that the government has been taking $11.4 billion a year mm. out of the NHT mm-hmm. from 2017. Now, we had to implement that when we went into the IMF program in 2013 because mm-hmm. of the state of the public finances at the time, where the debt-to-GDP ratio, which we inherited, was 147% of GDP. And we had to struggle to get back into an IMF program, because you'll recall that the previous government under Bruce Golding and then Andrew Holness had basically crashed the economy, mm-hmm. and the IMF program had essentially been abandoned. So faced by, you know, looking at this precipice of default and so on, we decided, look, we have to set the country's public finances right for the future. Mm-hmm. And that involved going back to the IMF in a program with some very heavy lifting. We had to achieve, what, a 7.5% primary surplus each year, which meant we had to ensure that our revenues exceeded our housekeeping budgetary expenses by 7.5% of GDP, so that that money is available to pay down debt. And in 4 years, we were able to bring the public debt down
right.
substantially from 147% to 115%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, taking $11.4 billion out of the housing trust surplus was mm-hmm. a necessary part of squaring that circle for those 4 years. But mm-hmm. the legislation that we implemented was specific to say that it would come to an end in March 2017.
Mm.
And although the JLP had, in opposition, been very critical of that whole arrangement, because they said, you know, this is a housing trust fund and shouldn't be used and so on, and some of their affiliates even took the matter to court to challenge it, but lost.
Mm.
When they came to office, they proceeded to extend it from 2017 to 2021, and then in 2020, they've extended it again to 2026, which means that by the time this finishes, under their watch, they will have taken out over $100 billion from the NHT.
Whoa.
And this depletion of its resources has resulted in them now saying that they have to take away these critical benefits from vulnerable groups or groups who are deserving of that support.
And
so we are very upset about it, and we feel strongly about it.
Mm.
And it's something that we do not intend to accept.
And it should not be accepted. Why? Because with so many Jamaicans at this moment, and I did a presentation on this last week in terms of squatters' mm-hmm. condition in Jamaica. 20% of the Jamaica population, somewhere between 19 and 20% of the Jamaica population live below the poverty line. And for these benefits to be taken away from hardworking Jamaicans, I think Jamaicans need to now open their eye and understand that when we do these presentations, what we're doing is pretty much educating you on what's happening, what's fair and what's not fair. Too many Jamaicans, Mr. Golden, are living in squatters' condition. 595 squatters' site has been identified in Jamaica. Yes, we may know of the well-known ones like the Mona Commons, and you know, we talk about places like Riverton City and all those places, you know, because they're so well-known. But there are a lot of squatters' quarters in Jamaica, and this situation that is taking place, this back and forth with the whole who's taking NHT money and who gets the money and who loses benefits, you know, it is bad. You mentioned something earlier on, and we keep hearing about it, the brain drain. But we live in a bordering world, Mr. Golin, and people are going to move over the border if the grass is greener on the other side. What would you do to ensure that three critical areas in Jamaica, people will not try to leave or will leave in the numbers that they're leaving? Teachers, police officers, and nurses. If elected Prime Minister, what do you have in store to ensure that these people don't leave in the numbers that they're leaving?
Yes, it's a very important question, because as you have said, we have for many years suffered from, you know, large numbers of these professionals going over to other countries to take up opportunities. And the truth is, we can't expect them to do any differently. Recently there was a remark by the Deputy Mayor of Montego Bay saying that persons who migrate to the U.S. or wherever are cowards for leaving their country. And that was a very disrespectful and, I think, false characterization of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
People leave the country because the opportunities for a better life present themselves, and they have responsibilities to themselves and their families to move forward in life. What we need to do is to, first of all, treat those critical stakeholders, the teachers, the nurses and the police, and others like them, the firemen and so on. We need to treat them as worthy, and when we are discussing issues affecting their pay and their compensation and benefits, we must do so in a respectful way and full consultation with them and their unions, mm-hmm. and try and arrive at consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And we must be creative in how we address the issues. So even if the salaries can't reach the level that, for example, they are in Canada and Europe and the U.S., there are other benefits that are important. And, for example, housing is a critical one of mm-hmm. in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we should not be taking away interest rate discounts for public sector workers and motor vehicle concessions,
mm-hmm.
because all you're doing there is contributing to the negative feelings that they have about how they're treated in Jamaica and mm-hmm. increasing their impetus to migrate. Instead, mm-hmm. we must be finding other creative ways to make them want to stay in the country.
Mm-hmm.
For example, our spokesperson on education, Damon Crawford, Senator Crawford,
mm-hmm.
In a press conference this week, suggested a number of things that should be done to make them our teachers want to stay.
Right.
For example, he was talking about forgiving student debt. Many of our teachers have to borrow money from the Student Loan Bureau to attend teacher training colleges, or if they had a degree from other universities, they mm-hmm. may have student debt. We should offer them a reduction of their debt each year that they stay in the service.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of creative thinking that is needed to give our people a strong incentive for staying.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the kind of thinking that we would be embarking on, and this is the kind of approach that we'll be taking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't promise that we can deliver everything that is possible to have in the rich countries of the world,
mm-hmm.
but we at least can show good faith in how we deal with people, treat them with respect and openness when we have dialogue with them about their pay and their mm-hmm. conditions of work,
mm-hmm.
and work with them to find solutions that will enable them to feel justified in giving more service to their country,
mm-hmm.
and this is what we're committed to doing.
Mm. Opposition leader Mr. Mark J. Golden, our very special guest. I must tell you though, the statement made by the deputy mayor of Montego Bay, it was very disturbing. It unnerved the diaspora. But I must tell you that I had an opportunity last week. He gave us an exclusive interview last Sunday evening. And you can spread the word there in Jamaica that he did apologize. He did apologize.
Good.
And I actually asked him twice and I reiterated it. He said he is very sorry and he's apologizing to the diaspora for using the words that he used and called us cowards. Many people may not know that I contacted his attorney. He contacted a well-known attorney here and they asked him to come on and make those statements, and he did. He did apologize. It was a very bad statement because we're not coward enough. I've been here. I'm a young boy, but I've been here a good 40 years.
Well, listen, man. When you leave your home country and go to a foreign land mm-hmm. to try and make life,
yes.
you can't be a coward. If you're taking a major step.
Yes.
And you're going to a totally new environment. And there are all sorts of risks and uncertainties attendant on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that you afforded him the opportunity
yes.
to apologize.
Yeah.
And I commend him for having apologized. Look, we all make statements sometimes that we subsequently regret,
mm-hmm.
especially on political platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that. But, you know, I'm not pushing the issue, but I mm-hmm. just raised it because mm-hmm. it's an example
yes.
of, I think, a kind of a mindset
mm-hmm.
that is why people in the public sector are feeling mm-hmm. more and more frustrated and inclined
mm-hmm.
to want to give up. Because
mm-hmm.
they don't feel
mm-hmm.
that the government or the elected officials ought to be having their back
mm-hmm.
and helping them to make a rough life easy, so mm-hmm. to speak. You know, they don't feel that they really care about
mm-hmm.
them, and that is why I mentioned it.
Mm. You know, there was a time in Jamaica when it is said that every parish had an hospital. We want to get back to those days, Mr. Mark Golden. I see they're pushing the issue for Greater Portmore to be a parish, and I think Greater Portmore does not have an hospital, so I think the Jamaican people should stand up for that and ensure that certain things are put in place before Portmore becomes a parish. This conversation about moving on, I think the Jamaican people should be well-educated, should get well-educated on this. We don't want what happened to us at independence in 1962 to reoccur again. Too many people were in did not know how back then. We want people to be in the know. And one last thing before you go, crime and violence. It still remains at the top of the list. A recent front page story from the Gleaner. It showed an empty picture of the National Stadium, an empty photo of the National Stadium. And it is said that since Jamaica gained political independence on August 6, 1962, over 40,000 people have been murdered in Jamaica. I do hope that the fact that you have started a conversation with folks like Attorney at Law and former and retired FBI Special Agent Mr. Wilfred Ratigan, I do hope that if elected Prime Minister, crime and violence will be on the top of your agenda to ensure to us here in the diaspora that when we come to Jamaica, we feel comfortable. Some of us don't. So the crime and violence situation, Mr. Golden, it is very bad and it needs to be rectified. Your closing remarks before you go this morning, sir. 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you just said. I think that the crime and violence problem is the worst problem that we face at the moment. It saps the will and the hope of the people. And it also significantly diminishes economic activity and investment and holds us back from an economic development point of view as well. It requires a holistic approach. There must be issues around more effective law enforcement, laws which tackle the real issues that are making policing more difficult, mm-hmm. relationships that need to be strengthened with countries which send us weapons and mm-hmm. send us other criminal mm-hmm. Problems that augment the criminal problem that we have. Mm-hmm. It also involves the source of the whole issue, which is why so many youths turn to crime and turn to the gun. Mm-hmm. And what is the reason why we have so many of our youngsters ending up in badness, in the gun culture, in the scamming? And that is a whole to do. That is to do with values and attitudes, parenting, and the weaknesses in the education system which fail them, and which result in them having no alternative if they want to achieve certain status in their own mind anyway, mm-hmm. than going down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. So we have to tackle all of these things. Mm-hmm. But at least I feel we have a good appreciation of the problem. Mm-hmm. Our track record when we were last in government was good. Mm-hmm. In fact, murders were substantially lower each year on average than they have been since or mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were doing that without states of emergency or other abrogations of the rights of the people. Mm-hmm. And police fatal shootings were also reduced by 50% mm-hmm. when we were last in government. So we feel our experience is solid, our track record is solid, mm-hmm. and we want to build on that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we will be doing so in consultation with experts and those yes. who have, you know, the capacity to make, help that process and enrich that process. Mm-hmm. People like Mr. Ratigan and others.
Yes, sir. Leader of the Opposition, once again, Mr. Mark J. Golden, is our very special guest this Saturday morning. One thing I can say to Mr. Golden, I can tell the people I know who's not a coward. And that person is Mark J. Golden, because once again, he stood with us this morning for almost an hour, taking on the real topic in Jamaica. So I commend you, sir, and I applaud you. I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. Your folks told me that you would be on this morning, and when they called me, they said you were sitting there waiting for the phone call. So thank you so much, Mr. Golden. And we will do it again, you know. We will do it again, because the people love to hear from you, Mark, and really and truly having these conversations and getting to know the people are getting to know you more and more, Mr. Mark J. Golden. So thank you very much, sir. I hope it was worth your time.
It was, and thank you for having me, and thank you to the listeners for listening.
Yes, sir.
And have a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
One love, Mr. Mark Golden. Take care. One love.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our presentation. That was the leader of the opposition party in Jamaica, the president of the People's National Party, Mr. Mark J. Golden. We're going to have to wrap and turn the station over to the Wake Up Radio team. The jam comes in at 1. At 6, it's going to be Link Up, and at 8 p.m., it's going to be Soundchat Radio. Groovin' Radio was executively produced by Clement Hume and Christopher Roberts. Groovin' Radio was hosted by Rasclem. Contributing to our presentation this morning, musically we started off our musical presentation with the one and only Mr. Roy Thompson, known to the world as Bugle. A brand new song from Marion All. We got in there this morning. We got in our community engagement segment, the Mustard Seeds are getting ready for their 31st annual luncheon here in New York. One of their team members, Miss Judith Jackson, joined us all the way from Jamaica. We got news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now. Mr. Jovan Johnson was the presenter. Anthony Turner, who is on the ground in Jamaica, he brought us entertainment report and he produced the bio for our very special guest, opposition leader from the People's National Party, Mr. Mark J. Golden. My name is Rasklem. I'll see you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Peace, love, and blessings. Wake Up Radio is up next.